Welcome to another edition of the Scenic View Podcast. I'm Jonathan Owens, your Scenic Communications Director. With me is Artis Watkins, Executive Director of Scenic. Hello, Artis.
Hey, John.
We have a bit of a hodgepodge episode for you this week. We're going to kind of review all of the topics that have come up in the last week and a half since we were on the podcast.
Things always keep moving in state government, don't they?
Yeah, we were talking earlier and we were just kind of like, should we do a, we have to do a podcast here soon, right?
Right. We don't want to stay out of touch.
And I was kind of thinking, I was like, well, we don't have a lot of, and then I just started naming things in my head and we have several topics we can touch on.
It is, for good or bad, always eventful in state government.
Especially when the legislature comes back to town, although they haven't really got down to business on our issues yet.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a few things. First off, I guess the tragic deaths in Charlotte. Four law enforcement officers, including two state employees, Sam Peloche and Alden Elliott, were killed in an ambush-style assault. I guess they were serving a warrant.
They were trying to serve a warrant, in Charlotte. And it was on someone where weapons charges were involved. And I have no idea. No one outside of those agencies probably has any idea what happened. It seems like he knew they were coming.
Yeah, so I first saw the tweet around, I guess, right after it was tweeted. And I was like, totally shocked to hear that three at the time, officers had been killed. And you just don't expect that large a number, you know.
Eight total were shot.
Yeah. And I think I sent it to you guys. I sent it to the management team here and just kind of, we were all shocked that it's, you know, public employees in general. And then we hear later that it was two state employees. I don't really know a lot about the unit they're in. Do you know?
Yeah, I actually spoke to this group not long ago. It's the Special Operations Intelligence Unit of the Department of Adult Corrections. And they have any number of things they do, but sometimes they get called in. It's my understanding if there is, you know, like that, let's say there's riots in a town, they might get called in to help with controlling things or certainly with serving warrants, things like that. And they have a special relationship with the U.S. Marshals by which these officers can be employed to help. And that's what was happening that day.
Yeah, I think one of the other officers that was killed was a marshal, right? A U.S. marshal.
There was a full U.S. marshal and a Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department officer.
It's just a very sad situation. I know we've seen a lot of outpouring of support from our membership that really just wanted to know how we could help and everything. So we do have that information on our website. If you would like to, you know, donate to their families or send cards, we have that information available.
Yeah, it's www.scanc.org. Yeah. And there are a number of groups who are trying to put things together for the families. And it's a really sobering reminder that the work of so many public employees, and not just the folks in that unit, that is, to be clear, those are sort of elite trained individuals doing a very specific, specialized, important job, and that we're very proud as state employees that there are state employees who can help the U.S. Marshals and people like that when needed. I think it's such an important unit. It's something people have not heard of for the most part, but there are so many public employees, not just state employees, every day, at any moment, who could encounter a deadly situation, not just a dangerous situation. And it really is a sobering reminder. It reminds me of 7 years back. And it was ironically, this ambush in Charlotte happened just a few days after the 7th anniversary of the murder of Megan Callahan, a correctional officer at Bertie Correctional. And, you know, 6 months after that, there was the murder of four correctional officers at Pasquotank. I remember how sobering that time was.
Yeah.
Just such a reminder that this is dangerous work.
Yeah. Once I first heard that they were state employees, my mind immediately thought of those days. That was.
Yeah. It's awful. But it does, again, sometimes the awful things are the things that might provoke positive change. You hope. At the end of the day, can provoke some positive change. So in addition to offering our thoughts and our prayers and our financial help to the families who now have to try to put their lives back together as much as they possibly can, and to show how much we are thankful that these officers were willing to serve us in this way, we have to try to make sure that everybody else that's still on the job is taken care of properly.
And like you said, it's not just this elite. We get reports, it seems like, 3 or 4 times a year of someone dying in DOT.
Absolutely. If you're DOT working on the road. And I mean, I always think when I drive through a work zone, I don't know how anybody has the nerves to do that. It would be nerve-wracking to me. But
yeah, I ran out of gas a few days ago, and I was afraid to get out of the car.
You are, yes, your family and running out of gas.
Yeah, my son also did that. So.
Like father, like son. But I think look at the situation on campus in Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really think when you're going to work on a university campus that you might have an active shooter situation. We had the really tragic and deadly situation at UNC Charlotte a few years ago. Our probation parole officers every day knock on doors that people don't want to see them.
Yeah.
And they never know what they're going to face. So, you know, we kind of want to shout out everybody in state government, especially those of y'all who are putting yourself at risk every day for the rest of us, please know that we understand it. We get it, that you're doing that. And we are trying to make the word known to everybody else.
Yeah, I think I've always kind of considered that a probation and parole, a job that people don't maybe think that is as dangerous as it really is, because these people are going into homes of known, like known criminals, right?
Well, again, when a probation parole officer is arriving, some folks are perfectly cool to see them and other folks are not happy. Or maybe you don't know if you're arriving and that person's there or if other people are there, what they're like, if anybody's under the influence of anything that might make them act erratically. These are all things they have to think about. But even our folks at DMV.
Mm-hmm.
The folks giving the tests,
the examiners.
Yes. So even our folks at DMV, like the examiners, have to get in a vehicle with somebody they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to do the driving portion of the test, that takes a lot. I wouldn't want to get in the car with people I don't know all day.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, sad situation in Charlotte. I noticed in the story about the procession that Officer Peloche's, they said that he had two sons, 18 and 21. One is graduating high school this year and the other is graduating college.
That's just, I mean, that adds a layer of tragedy to it. That's just, it's unimaginable, but.
And then Officer Elliott's son had written a poem that they shared as well. So,
yeah, they were clearly very loved and they will be incredibly missed. It's just something you can't ever make that up to anybody. But everybody keep them and their families in your thoughts and prayers. And again, you know, there were 8 people shot total. So 4 people lived but were shot or in some way hurt. They may not have all been shot, but there were 8 people hurt.
Yeah,
that day.
Well,
and to all the coworkers, because we know some of these coworkers of the individuals who were killed. And to all of them, you know, our hearts go out to you as well. It's not a massive unit of people, so they know each other.
Well, there's no easy segue from that, but
there is
another thing that happened last week. Was earlier in the week, the governor released his budget proposal for the year. Can you explain just a little bit about the uniqueness of this year's budget, where it's already been determined, but this is maybe for folks who don't know that this is...
Yes.
Yeah.
So our budget cycles in North Carolina, if you aren't familiar with it, there's a long session where the original budget is written. And that's when a new crop of legislators, some returning and some brand new, start their work. And then there's the next year after that, what they call a short session. And that's traditionally been where only expansion items for the budget would be considered. But it used to be that every long and every short session, we had to lobby for a pay raise. Going into this year, there is a 3% pay raise, what we call baked in. So it's already there. No matter what, state employees will get a 3% pay raise this year. Our retirees did not have anything baked in because they've been getting one-time money for a while now due to the fact that every 1% of cost of living adjustment for retirees costs 10 times that amount, as we went over in the last time on the podcast. But anyway, the 3% is baked in for active employees. We're trying to add to that.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to make sure we get something for the retirees that is meaningful, to try to let them know their years of service meant something and they're still appreciated. And we understand that their bills are going up too. So we're working on those two things, and we're working hard on a retention bonus across the board.
Yeah. So Governor Cooper's proposal, I guess this is his last budget proposal.
Yeah, this is the last one.
Until 4 years from now when he runs again. just kidding. So he proposed that 3% be increased to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Then he also proposed a retention bonus of $1,500 for anyone making less than $75,000 annually and $1,000 for everyone else, and a 3% one-time bonus for retirees. I guess we always have to write in these stories about the governor's proposal that it signals his priorities, but it's unlikely to pass.
Historically, even if the governor's of the same party that controls the legislature, the governor's budget is, it comes over as a recommendation.
Yeah.
The legislature tends to put their own stamp on things. So we don't have reason to think this will be any different. As far as wanting to add 2% to the 3% that's already in there for active state employees, I think that's a great number to shoot for. The retention bonus, we agree with them on that. Would make it higher because, it's taxed, obviously. So you want people to feel it when they take it home after they've paid the taxes out of it.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, obviously, is with a vacancy rate that's hovering anywhere between 23% and 25% and has for well over a year, it's time for some investment, some more drastic measures to, and we were talking about, there's a Smart Asset and CNBC did a study of what it costs to live in Raleigh. And of course, Raleigh's just who the study's focused on, but there's a lot of the state employees.
Yeah.
And it said for a person to live comfortably, according to the study, a single adult would need to make $102,752 a year.
Wow.
Not absolutely shocking when you think about rent and everything like that around here, but your state employees make like half of that.
Yeah.
And no one is suggesting the legislature should go in and change everybody's salary to $102,000 as a floor of salary and then work up from there. But to be that far off the median could be a big part of the reason for a 25% vacancy rate.
Yeah, it obviously is. It looks like Senate Leader Berger and Tim Moore both weighed in this story on the News and Observer about the proposal. Seemed like they said there's kind of some things they could work with. I don't know what you think about that, if that's true or...
I have no idea. I don't think the governor's budget was a radical budget. So that wouldn't shock me that they can work with a lot of what he's got there. Obviously, this last week, the issue of incentives for schools became the big story of the week.
The voucher program? Is that what that's going to take a lot of money to fulfill, right?
About half a billion dollars, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big chunk of money. There's people all over the map on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if that's the opening salvo from the General Assembly, they're saying right there, this is kind of where our financial priority is. That's a big chunk of the overrealized revenue this year. I think Senate has already sent a message of sorts by, passing a bill that would put almost half a billion dollars towards school vouchers. And that is obviously a departure from anywhere Governor Cooper went in his budget or in his plans. So how that plays out in the House and whether or not they spend that kind of money on the vouchers, that's probably the biggest distinction. Other than that, I don't think Governor Cooper's budget was a radical budget compared to their thinking.
So where do we go from here? Obviously, it's going to be a few months before we have a final budget, right?
Right. So now the legislature starts crafting their budget to put it out. And each year they alternate House and Senate as far as who goes first in terms of crafting and releasing their budget. Last year, the House went first. So this year, the Senate will go first.
Mm-hmm. I guess one issue we'll also be watching is if DMV privatization is included in that budget.
Oh, yeah. I think that that's an ongoing topic where... I think it was about 6 weeks ago or so that legislative leaders had Commissioner Goodwin in and his team to answer a lot of questions, and they were going to continue gathering information about that. So we're definitely staying involved and interested in that because we have a lot of members at DMV and a lot of people when we visited DMV a couple of months ago who were incredibly worried about this issue.
And all privatization efforts in general. We have kind of a laundry list of topics we have to watch when a budget comes out.
And when you have a 25% vacancy rate, sometimes it just feels like to heck with it. We can't fix this. So we're just going to start privatizing everything. The problem is that gets you nowhere because if we can't get people to come to work in these jobs for what we're paying right now, neither will private contractors.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they not only need to be able to employ the people to do the work, they need to make a profit. State government doesn't need to make a profit. They just need to provide the service and make sure they can do it
So there's no way. I mean, we've talked about it before, but it just doesn't seem like there's any way that a private company can do.
No, it sounds good. And usually, you know, you'll get offered. If you're a governmental entity, you will get offered a sweetheart deal in the short run. Always. Mm-hmm. Because the goal is, like with DOT privatization, the goal is sell your equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Take us on as a contractor. We'll handle it. Sell your equipment. You don't need it anymore. Well, yeah. Then you've sold your equipment. So if you want to take the control back and provide those services yourself, now you have a capital outlay before you can even provide the services. So it's the kind of thing that lawmakers have to think long and hard about doing. Yeah.
Any other topics at the legislature you could think of that we should touch on?
I mean, I think retirement, protecting this retirement system and making sure that not only retirees get compensation, you know, some sort of cost of living that's meaningful, but also protecting that defined benefit, because it is one of the things we have that can attract employees. And we don't have the salaries, obviously not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We took away healthcare upon retirement a couple of years ago for new employees. So the things that used to draw people to the state and away from other places where they could make more money are, some of them aren't there anymore. But that same goes with the health plan. The health plan is facing serious financial trouble if, you know, if the legislature doesn't make sure they fund it and take care of it. And if we don't get things under control, like these out of control hospital costs and pharmaceutical costs.
So every time we post a budget story on our Facebook page, the retirees are upset, rightfully so, about a one-time bonus as opposed to a cost of living adjustment.
Right.
Can you explain how the retirement system was set up and just kind of what the issue is?
So the way the retirement system, they call it the teachers and state employees retirement system, was originally set up was so that gains in the system, so investment gains made from investing the money in the fund, would pay for COLAs. And it did for years and years and years. And then in the early 2000s, when it started to become popular to see alternative investments, hedge funds, things like this, our system and many others around the country, every other system, was just absolutely hounded by folks trying to peddle those kind of investments.
Yeah.
And you started to see, you know, a marked decrease in what we were getting back. But we started paying all these incentive fees to investment managers. So it made no sense. On top of that, you had financial fallout of 2008.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been some blips in the radar, some hard times. There have been other incredibly bull markets during this time. But even during a bull market, we've not made up the ground we lost by getting so much of our system wrapped up in these crazy alternative investments.
When you add a COLA, you have to figure it for what, 12 years? Is that correct?
The legislature, the Fiscal Research Division, has provided a number that legislators have asked for when they put together the budget. If they put a COLA out of general fund money, which means just out of the state of North Carolina general money that they're doing the budget from, instead of doing it from the retirement system gains, then yes, they want to multiply that number. It's either 10 or 12 years. It's a long...
Yeah, because it's a reoccurring
experience.
It's
a huge number because it... Yeah, and so that's the actuaries have told them, hey, you need to fund it. Count on paying that out for at least this long. And the problem there, obviously, is you're never going to see... For a 1% for retirees, you're never going to see an extra half a billion sitting around that the legislature is going to be willing to dedicate just to give a 1% COLA to retirees.
Yeah.
And it's a huge issue.
It's a huge ask.
It's a huge ask. But, you know, these retirees went to work for the state thinking they were going to have this retirement that had always been funded out of gains, always had gains. It's not their fault that there was over the years. And this isn't the current treasurer. He's done a good job trying to pull this stuff back. But there were some decisions made about investments that without question impacted our funds for years and years. And you can't fix that overnight. So what are the retirees to do? Well, they're going without. So that's why they're angry. Uh-huh. And they should be. I just want them to realize that it's not for lack of trying from us and others on their behalf. It's that what we're told we have to get in order to get that 1% is simply, it's just an insurmountable number.
Yeah. Other issues from this past week, the State Health Plan Board of Trustees and the Retirement System Board of Trustees met. Anything big come out of those meetings?
Yeah.
The weight loss issue is one of them.
Well, the weight loss drugs continue to be discussed. And the question of why we're paying multiple times what any other country pays for those same drugs, the question of whether the pharmacy benefit manager, which just as a recap, is the middleman who negotiates for the plan. The plan pays a fee every month of a lot of money to CVS Caremark as our PBM to negotiate with drug manufacturers. And there's continuing dialogue in the board of trustees of the health plan over whether that's going the way they want it to. And so those issues still have to be sorted out. The bad news is it's a lot to sort out. The good news is I've never seen them discuss it.
Yeah.
So this board of trustees is really digging deep to where most people didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so many medications. It's not just weight loss drugs, as we keep saying. This is drugs for stroke, to prevent strokes, to treat cancer. You know, there's so many drugs that are affected.
Yeah.
That are just out of reach. But at the end of the day, all of this coupled with the issue about hospital costs that Treasurer Falwell's been trying to control, that is putting our system, our health plan, in an unsustainable position. And that's a real thing. The money has to come from somewhere.
It's putting not only our state health plan in jeopardy, but also just American healthcare in general.
Oh, I mean, our health plan is very indicative of American healthcare. The, you know, the problem is somebody's got to take the first step to do something, and Treasurer Falwell has very much tried to be that person to say, I'm responsible to these plan members. I can't fix America, but I'm going to try to take care of these 750,000 people in the health plan. And so Scenic is standing strong with him and hopefully with whoever comes in behind him to not just kowtow and pay whatever you're told without it making sense.
And it's, you know, for so long, it seemed like the healthcare issue in America became like the third rail almost, that you know, after 2010, no one wanted to talk about it. Seems like the fight always goes to you want socialized medicine or you want single payer healthcare. But, you know, I mean,
well, we can't ignore it anymore. I mean, we all kind of just wanted to say, oof, it feels like I have to be extreme either way. The bottom line is the money's not there for wages. You know, employers will tell you, we're an employer here. I can tell you one of the big dings you're taking as an employer if you're trying to provide health care for your folks is that it's more and more obviously outrageously expensive every year. Why is that?
Yeah.
So as a country, we can't ignore it anymore. We're having to answer the question of why is that?
Yeah.
And for the state employees, if the legislature has to kick in $1 billion a few years down the road to keep this health plan going, you can guarantee there not only won't be raises, there not only won't be anything for retirees, but they'll be saying we need to look at cutting jobs.
Yeah.
So everybody better care what's going on with the health plan because it's going to affect their everyday life, no matter who they are.
I would say that's probably the biggest expenditure for a family beyond housing, rent, and things
absolutely
like that. Yeah. So also out of that meeting at the state health plan was a little information about the Medicare Advantage plans. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, the Medicare Advantage plans for our retirees that participate in that, there's about 4,200 state retirees that participate in it and 22,000 dependents. That's been it's administered, again, through Humana. It's been a $0 a month premium for this Medicare Advantage plan. Really very cool benefit. And Humana has announced to the state health plan, kind of in a surprise move, that it would go from $0 a month to $33 a month in 2025. So stay tuned for developments as we
and as we just talked about, these are also folks who aren't getting COLAs.
That's right.
As well.
That's right. They're not getting the COLAs. They're looking at their Medicare Advantage plan going up. And, you know, it's the same issues at the end of the day, right? That if these healthcare costs are going up everywhere, I mean, if they're going up in the regular health plan for the issues we've talked about, of course they're going up in Medicare Advantage plans. All of these things are connected.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll definitely keep our eye out on that issue as well. I'm sure we'll have more information at the next board meeting.
And yes.
Now, when was that going into effect? Next year? Is that
it
correct?
Would be 2025. So, okay. And by the way, while we're on the subject of the health plan, shout out to past president of Scenic, Wayne Fish, who serves on the board of trustees of the state health plan, who has been a real fighter on behalf of the state employees and retirees.
Yeah. And President Montgomery spoke at the last meeting as well.
He did. He spoke on the issue of the GLP-1s and, you know, did a great job. He was, and it was recognized after he spoke that we had gone up to Capitol Hill, talked to our North Carolina congressional delegation and to Senator Sanders and his staff from the HELP committee, mm-hmm. who are working on this issue nationally of drug prices being out of whack. So there was a lot of scenic presence and hard work and fight on behalf of our members at that plan. And we'll keep that up. That very same day, the board of trustees of the retirement plan met. They met in the morning, health plan in the afternoon. And Jamie Robinson, who's our retiree council chair, was there representing our retirees. So we've got, and that's all in addition to our lobbying staff who covers those meetings regularly. But our volunteer members are also showing up, being heard from. So want to shout out to those members.
And I think this is as good a time as any to make our plea for active members. We love our active members here who actually get out and do the volunteering work like that.
100%.
So if you have a issue you're very passionate about, please let us know. We're definitely excited to have you come out and help us on these issues.
100%. It's what we need. It's what has to happen to make a difference. And when we band together, it does make a difference and it's noticed. And so let's definitely try to keep that going. Scenic has a longstanding reputation for that.
And speaking of getting involved, the best place to get involved initially is at your districts.
Correct.
And districts will be holding their annual meetings in the next few months around the state. This brings me to my question of the week.
Well, first explain what you mean by districts. There's listening that may not know.
Scenic has 51 districts across the state. They can be geographic specific or they can be agency specific, dependent on, you know, like we have some that just represent DOT in a specific area, or like Broughton Hospital has its own district, whereas there's three districts in Morganton.
Right.
So we have 5, 6, and 7 in Morganton. We have districts of 64 and 65 in Greenville. One is the East Carolina and one is the geographic area.
Right.
We have the same situation all across the state, and everyone who's a Scenic member is a member of a district, whether you know it or not. You can check that on our Scenic website.
Or call us.
And you can find your contact information for your district chair, and you can get involved in your district. And it's always fun to go to those annual meetings.
Annual meetings are where the business is done.
Yeah. So each district has to have an annual meeting every year. It's usually accompanied by a nice meal and a free meal, usually.
And they are very nice about that.
So my question is, do you want to put in my jingle here? Okay. The jingle.
John's wacky weird question of the week.
Well, what a great jingle that was. So the question is, what is your favorite eatery to go to during an annual meeting?
Eatery, like restaurant?
Restaurant. Like what is your favorite food on the, we call it the barbecue circuit because most of the places are barbecue restaurants. And we try to get to as many as we can throughout the 3 or 4 months there. And it's usually a good barbecue restaurant or two. Do you want me to go first?
Of course, yes.
Okay.
You clearly have thought this through.
I put her on the spot. So I guess my mea culpa to Wilson, who I offended heavily last week with my talk of the Whirly Gigs, is I've always enjoyed the District 57's Parker's Barbecue meetings. Yeah, so Parker's is amazing. Everyone knows that. It's my favorite barbecue restaurant. There's another one in Rocky Mount. Gardner's Barbecue was really good. Went there one time. I had some time to think about this. And then District 3, I think they did theirs at the Daniel Boone Inn one time. I saw on the list, and I missed that one.
So they have done it at the Daniel Boone Inn. And actually, they did it last year at the Daniel Boone Inn. Shout out to District 3, because I got to be there and eat.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you took that one. Yeah.
I definitely took that one. And I mean, it can be good to go to these annual meetings.
Yeah. I think that's all of my honorable mentions for the time being.
Like I said.
I have opinions.
So I think for me, District 61, our chair is Cindy Hester, and shout out to Cindy because Country Squire in Kenansville.
Oh, wow.
Is where she does her Christmas event for the district and her annual meeting. And I love everything about Country Squire. I love the food. I love the location. I love the food. The building. If you haven't been to Country Squire, go in Kenansville. Next time you find yourself just prancing through Kenansville.
And they are not an advertiser on the Scenic View
podcast. No, there are no sponsors. So, and District 67, and they Patty Moore's district, they meet, well, they have met, not this year, I don't think. I think they're doing something different this year. But for years, they met at a Texas Roadhouse.
Texas Roadhouse is a very underrated steak. Like, yeah. It's and very high-quality steak for the chain.
And that was also, it was just a very good time. And great food, very good time.
But you'll have fun at any of the annual meetings that you go to. They usually have some door prizes, and they have some fellowshipping. So it's fun time.
It's a good time. And a lot of effort goes into it. So you're absolutely right, John. That's absolutely something we should recommend. If you're listening to this, you want to get involved, you want to know more, and you're not sure how to get involved, definitely go to our website, look up the annual meetings, figure out which one is yours, and go get involved.
Yeah. Well, that concludes our episode for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening.